WW2AG at Yonkers, New York, operating on frequency modulation at 2.5 meters. My name is Randy Runyon, and I'm a little nervous, so I'm going to make myself a drink here. Scotch and soda. I had a little script of things I wanted to say, Major, but I think I'm just going to throw it away. And I'll let my son Frank, who's quite a budding musician, play for you. Sit right down, son.
Hutchins is about a quarter of a mile down that way. There's a trail to the Palisades. And I'm going to build a studio right about here.
Well, then here's where we'll have our picnic. I'll unpack things. Spread out the blanket, please.
We're 500 feet above the river. The tower's going to be 400 feet straight up from here. I'll sit on a crossbeam and wave at Sarnoff right through his office window. That'll get his goat. He is going to watch FM broadcasting happen whether RCA wants it or not.
It's costing you a fortune.
Well, it's RCA stock. Price is sure good. And I don't want to hold stock in a company that tries to steal patents instead of paying for them. I've known Dave Sarnoff for 23 years. I thought we were friends. He tries to cheat me. He's got the Federal Communications boys twisted around his fat fingers.
Shh, Hal. Sit down and eat your chicken.
I'll open the champagne. Oh, wait! Something I want to do first. Where's that little $3 axe? I'm going to chop down a tree, Minnie. That one right there. And that's right where the base of the transmitting tower will be. Ah, got it. Right, stand back.
Wait, Howard. Lunch first, tree afterward. Here, I'll save the chip.
Perfect. That is the first chip out of RCA's hide. We'll bottle it. We'll seal it in a radio tube. Where's the champagne?
Here. Be careful. Here's to you.
And to you, my dear. And to our future.
Dear sis, thanks for your letter. I miss you too. And now that spring is here, I'll try and get away for a visit soon, with or without Howard. Probably without. It's been a whole year since we drank champagne together up at Alpine. He's been there practically ever since. The man works in all kinds of weather, hundreds of feet up, sometimes in fog so thick he can't see the ground. In January, he had ice falling on his head from the ironwork above him, and so he started wearing a wooden box over his head and back to keep from getting killed. He loves standing on the heights, he says. He scared me half to death 15 years ago, doing stunts on top of Aeolian Hall, but I married him anyway. Oh, sis, if this FM business doesn't work out for him soon, I think he'll drive both of us crazy. Isn't it ironic, though, how now we're always tuned into this thing he invented for the news reports from Europe? Did you hear Ed Merle from Vienna last week? The Germans marching into Austria? Will 1938 be the year another terrible war starts? Sometimes I'm really frightened, just listening.
CBS will bring you a news roundup on the crisis at 7:30 Eastern Time with Edward R. Murrow in London and William Schreier in Prague. Now here's a summary of the news bulletins that have been flooding onto the wire this evening. More rioting by Nazis in the Sudetenland. France is to mobilize 2 million reservists by the end of 1938.
We interrupt this program to bring you a bulletin from the wires of Associated Press. Germany has issued an ultimatum.
From Vienna, Austria, this news flash, Czechoslovakia will cede its territory to Germany, preventing the war that has been feared for several weeks. Once again,
scouting planes report three Martian machines visible above treetops, moving towards Somerville with population fleeing.
Julia, calm down. It's only the radio.
But it seems so real.
Those Martians come to California. I'll zap them with my Buck Rogers ray gun. Pow, pow.
Shh, bud, there are no Martians.
Oh, it did sound awfully real, Father.
They ought to shoot that man Wells for scaring people like that.
Orson Welles, the young magician with the voice of the shadow, showed the whole nation one October Sunday night in 1938 radio's power to seduce and delude. The demonstration is taken seriously by social commentators and military planners, but generally forgotten as the country refreshes itself in the blissful illusion of a peaceable future. 1939 World's Fair crowds throng San Francisco's lushly goofy Treasure Island and sample the science fictional wares of Long Island's World of Tomorrow. David Sarnoff shows off television in the tube-shaped RCA building. General Electric takes a license on Major Armstrong's FM patents, produces a golden tone radio that sets the pace for spectacular realism in high fidelity reception, and plans its own FM station in Schenectady. Armstrong Station, W2XMN, Alpine, New Jersey, goes on the air in July, and 6 months later, he and his associates demonstrate an FM microwave relay that threatens the lifeblood of the phone company. By the summer of 1940, even RCA capitulates. It offers Howard Armstrong $1 million.
No! Not for a non-exclusionary license. No, sir! GE pays me a 2% royalty, so does Zenith and Stromberg Carlson. Sarnoff. Sarnoff has fought me all the way on FM, and his damnable lawyers cost me regeneration. Every week, some engineer finds a new way to make FM work. The police are using it. Television sound is going to use it. Inside of the next 3 or 4 years, more people will be listening on FM than AM. RCA is going to pay me 2 pennies on every dollar they make from using these patents. Take it or leave it.
Leave it. The RCA is through with Major Armstrong. I want our engineers to start putting together some FM system that doesn't have anything to do with his patents. There's a war coming. That'll put everything off for 2 or 3 years, maybe more. When it's over, people are going to be buying televisions, not new radios. And the broadcasting business isn't going to sit still and let itself be dismantled by this man. The FCC won't allow it. FM is going to be what we say, when we want it.
I'd like to tell you about my Christmas mousetrap, you see. It's a little box here. It's got a hole in the end, you see, where the mouse goes in. And then he sits down on the little chair there. There's a switch, you see. It turns on a projector, and the mouse gets to watch an old Gary Cooper picture. There's a little popcorn and some cheese. And then when the movie's over, you see, there's a hole at the other end where the mouse can go out. Well, it's Christmas, you know. I couldn't kill anything.
Major Armstrong?
That's right, Colonel. Am I too late? It took me longer to drive down here than I thought.
Oh, no, sir, Major. We're still about 10 minutes away from the test.
Oh, God.
I'm Colonel Donnelly, in command of the Signal Corps Laboratory. We're all very glad to have you here.
Thank you.
I'd just like to say, Major, that the men here know how much you did for the war effort, sir. I was in Germany after D-Day, and I know the war would have lasted much longer if we hadn't had FM on our side. Walkie-talkies, tank radios, it saved a lot of lives, I'll tell you that.
I'm very glad to hear that, Colonel. We had a very hard fight to get the Army to accept FM. You know that.
Yes, sir. Well, you know how people like the status quo.
I've been cursed with that knowledge for 30 years. Well, Colonel, if it's all right, how about a tour?
Right. Hey, you've never been out to Fort Evans, I take it.
No, I didn't think so until I was nearly here. And then I realized this was where the Belmar Marconi station used to be. I was out here 34 years ago, just this time of year, January 1912. Dave Sarnoff and I, General Sarnoff, he is now, we froze our rear ends for 2 days in a drafty cabin somewhere around here. We tuned my first regenerative receiver into signals from Ireland and San Francisco, Hawaii.
Well, that must have been something.
Yes, it was. And now you're going to bounce radar off the moon.
With your system, sir, and your transmitter.
239,000 miles, and they said FM would reach 50.
Hey, come over here, Major, and watch the oscilloscope. We're about ready to kick the power on.
Good luck, Colonel.
Three.
Good luck to you, Major.
One. Go. One, Diana. Two, Diana. Three.
There it is. Ah, did you see it, Major? The blip on the screen? That was it. To the moon and back in 2.5 seconds. Oh, damn, it works. It really works.
It means we're not limited to this earth, doesn't it, Colonel? If we can talk to the moon, we can go there and talk back, can't we?
Yeah, I guess a lot of people told you it was impossible.
You know what I always say, Colonel? It's the things people know that ain't so.
I'll remember that, Major. I'll remember that.
Major Armstrong's FM signals hit the moon, but on Earth, he falters. The empire of the airwaves consolidates its power and moves to divest the static-free Challenger of any chance to take its place in the ether. The FCC, operating out of Network Broadcasting's vest pocket, moves FM upwards in frequency, making 500,000 radios and 50 stations obsolete. They give FM's megacycles to television, creating a traffic jam among 13 channels. Worst of all, CBS and NBC convinced the commission to reduce FM power, limiting it to local broadcast, and then to allow the same programs sent out on AM to be duplicated on FM. It hardly matters, though, does it? Radio, in Fred Allen's words, is on a treadmill to oblivion.
I'm going to sue them, Minnie. I'm going to sue the pants off them, and this time I'm going to win.
Howard, you've spent most of your life waiting for judges to tell the world you're right. The people who count know what you've done, more than anyone else has done. Please, Howard, please call it off.
No, no, Minnie. It's time everyone knew how Sarnoff and the FCC and Paley and the rest of the big shots have put the screws into me. I'm starting with RCA. They stole my FM patents, and they're making television sets with them, and they're not paying me a cent. I'm suing for triple damages and an injunction to stop them from making so much of this.
They'll never settle, Howard. They won't settle, not for years. Not without costing us every penny we have first.
Oh, well, it'll take time. I know that. They may even have some smart legal trick up their sleeves to take it all away from me, but I have to do this, Minnie. I won't let them get away with impugning my reputation and destroying my business. Now, here's what I've decided to do. I'll give you half of everything, free and clear. You can invest the money however you want. Keep the property safe. That way, whatever happens, you won't go into the
Howard,
courthouse.
Howard, don't you understand? You're one lone man against a huge, rich, powerful corporation. They can't afford to let you win.
I will do what I know to be right.
Like the leaves on a B-movie calendar, the years peel off and fly away. Armstrong files his suit in July 1948, the year Ed Sullivan makes his television debut. The legal process, known as discovery, drags on. The last major radio variety program, The Big Show, starring Tallulah Bankhead, comes and goes, along with the Korean War, the Blacklist, and the hydrogen bomb. Americans are watching Milton Berle, I Love Lucy, and Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. Families eat their TV dinners watching Fugitives from Radio's Lights Out and Suspense, The Big Story in Big Town, The Aldrich Family, and even Amos and Andy. A chimpanzee named J. Fred Muggs becomes a regular on The Today Show, thereby establishing television's high standards of visual entertainment. In 1952, Armstrong's legal costs exceed his ability to pay them. Marion Armstrong suffers a mental collapse and attempts suicide. By 1953, after enduring weeks of harassing questions from RCA's attorneys, Armstrong watches while his old friend, General David Sarnoff, chairman of the board, answers a question.
Will you explain, sir, how your company has aided the development of FM?
Well, we have been developing the FM system. We've made it available with our combination sets and with receivers and with television. I will go further, and I will say that the RCA and the NBC have done more to develop FM than anybody in this country, including Armstrong.
Will you tell us just what it is you have done?
A major contribution was when the NBC led the parade in duplicating its AM programs over FM transmitters. And with all modesty, I claim the personal credit of having been the man who forced that development. Besides that, of course, we have invested $50 million in television. There are now 22 million televisions in American homes, and each one of them is an FM set, because the sound that accompanies the television picture is given on FM.
As they say on television, Howard, just the facts. Hear me out.
All right, you're my attorney, Al. Say what you have to say.
I've been trying to get you to settle this thing for 2 years, Howard. I've been asking you to make up your mind about what you want for a settlement.
How can I arrive at a figure when it's still obvious to me the court doesn't have all the facts?
Howard, if the actual trial were to start, say, in March of 54, 8 or 9 months from now, it'll take until June 1961 before all the appeals are heard, and whatever judgment the court might arrive at is paid. By 1961, we could all be in a war. Hell, we could be wiped out by an atom bomb. And if we aren't, Taxes are still going to be high. Let's say the feds are taking 60% in the high brackets. Your maybe $5 million is going to end up being $2 million, and your legal expenses over the next 8 years will be a minimum of $1.2 million. Maybe you'll see $500,000. Is it worth what you're doing to yourself, to Marion, to your business, to spend the next 8 years fighting for $500,000? Let's settle it.
I hate them.
They don't care. Put your time and energy into this FM multiplexing thing you've come up with.
Yes.
It is a great thing. We could have binaural broadcasting with absolute fidelity. An FM radio with two speakers could sound like Carnegie Hall.
Do it, Howard. Do it. Let me come up with a figure. Propose it to the other side. We could have some sort of settlement before Christmas.
All right. All right. I'm so tired. All that business this spring when I thought I had a stroke. I haven't felt right since. Numb. I feel numb all over sometimes. Do what you have to before I'm broke or dead. Do what you can.
So he finally came around. Fine. Give him 200,000 and dribble out another million. But let him know I won't agree to anything until he withdraws that crap about intentionally and deliberately obstructing and interfering with his use and development of FM. Major will take that language back. The RCA has developed FM. We took it over when he wouldn't settle for $1 million back in 1940. He'll admit that in public or he won't get a penny.
What is wrong, Howard? You hardly said goodbye to Randy. He's your oldest friend. He loves you. So does Tom Stiles. John Bowes told me out in the hall. He's very worried about you.
I'm sick of these Thanksgiving parties. What the hell is there to be thankful for? Listen, Marion. Sit down a minute, will you? Listen. I'm in trouble. I need your help. I need that money I gave you. This RCA thing has damn near bankrupted me. Your investments have done very well. I just need $100,000 or so. I owe Al McCormack. I don't have enough money to pay Bowes any sort of Christmas bonus after all he's done to help me with multiplexing. I don't even think I can keep the lab open after the first of the year.
That money is for our retirement.
I'm not ready to retire.
I was thinking we might drive up and see my sister for Christmas. That little antique store of hers is doing well. Maybe we could look at some nice houses around Granby. You know, that part of Connecticut...
The hell with your sister, Marion! You're always conspiring with her about something or other. Now it's moving up to the middle of nowhere? Huh. I have a business to run. I have a court case to look after.
Howard, have you told Al McCormack that you're going broke?
No. Yes.
Don't you think you could get him to settle? If you'd taken their $1 million 13 years ago, we wouldn't be going through this.
No, Mary.
For God's sake, take it now.
No, leave me alone. I'm going to bed, and I want some of that money I gave you, and we'll talk about how much tomorrow.
Not a dollar.
Oh.
Howard!
Oh.
Howard, have you gone crazy?
Oh.
Get away from me.
Oh, honey, your arm. I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
Get away from me!
Hello.
Howard, it's Al McCormack. How are you feeling?
Oh, hi. I'm all right. Touch of the flu. Where are you?
I'm in Washington. I have a Supreme Court appearance tomorrow morning. Listen, Howard, I'll be back in New York on Wednesday. That's February 3rd. I'm seeing Davis at RCA Friday. Given your situation, I'm going to take the $200,000 if we can get it immediately, and if they'll strike out option and guarantee the million, will you agree to that?
Yeah, whatever you can do, Al. Things can't wait until 1961.
How's Marion?
She's still at her sister's. I haven't seen her since Thanksgiving.
Howard, listen to me. Try and turn your mind to what you've accomplished over the years. Damn few men have been given the gifts you have. And I'll tell you this, Howard. You'll be remembered when all the rest of us have been long forgotten.
You don't know how little all that means when you've made a mess out of your life like I have.
I'll talk to you after I see Davis on Friday. Listen, Howard, why don't you call up Runyon and go out for a drink this afternoon?
Yes, I might do that.
Good. Well, keep warm. Bye, Howard.
Goodbye, Hal.
Dearest Marion, I'm heartbroken because I cannot see you once again. I deeply regret what happened between us. I cannot understand how I could hurt the dearest thing in the whole world to me. I would give my life to turn back to the time when we were so happy and free. My estate is solvent, especially if RCA comes through. Also, the telephone company should pay something, for they've been using my inventions. God keep you, and may the Lord have mercy on my soul.
He had never feared high places. At 10:30 the next morning, a doorman finds Major Armstrong's body, 10 floors below his apartment window on the roof of the River Club, dressed neatly in a suit and overcoat, a scarf, and gloves. When he hears the news, David Sarnoff says,
I did not kill Armstrong.
And from California, Lee DeForest crows.
I have always given him full credit for his introduction of FM, but have always taken the keenest delight in having beaten him so thoroughly on the feedback question. Well, after all, Armstrong is gone, and I am alive, well and happy, and hope to live for many years more. What a contrast.
It takes almost a year, but RCA finally coughs up the $1 million. But Marion Armstrong won't let it rest there. She presses litigation against Sylvania, Packard Bell, and Hoffman, against Raytheon, and half a dozen others, and settles them in 1957 and 58. Emerson loses its court fight in 1959 so decisively that nearly all the other companies who appropriated FM without paying Armstrong for his invention capitulate without a fight. Bendix, Philco, Dumont, Admiral, only Motorola holds out, and it loses too in the Supreme Court in October 1967. 53 years of litigation is finally over. The Armstrongs have won, and Marion, who had sold the forgotten carcass of their Hispano Suiza, buys it back, restored. And she can be seen on warm summer afternoons at Rye Beach, wearing a wide-brimmed hat, driving along the ocean road in the same graceful beauty in which her husband had courted her 40 years before.
This is WA2 XMN Alpine and WFDU Teaneck.